We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes. Yeah, welcome to Snacky Tunes, live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm one half your host, Trey Diabolic. I'm staring at the recently arriving in town DJ Never Forget.
Yes.
Yes. I just got back. It's good to be back, if only for a few days before you and I head out to Palm Springs.
Yes, very excited, and excited to hang out in Palm Springs Ace, get some work done, and see Swedish House Mafia in the desert.
Yeah, it's also going to be the International Short Film Festival, which is the largest in America.
We are also happy to announce that we have our final two barbecues locked in for the summer. July 13th, Good Company, Mark Lardner from Del Posto will be cooking at the barbecue.
I don't even know how you pulled that off.
Jay Strell, thank you very much. You know Jay Strell.
I know Jay Strell.
Yeah, Garrett knows Jay Strell. Jay Strell was a big instrumental, so he gets a big bottle of whiskey or a hug or something like that. And then the general...
Whiskey and a hug are of the same value in your mind?
Have you had my hugs?
Touché.
And then August 6th at the City Winery is our big event with Van Dag, Mile End, Dos Toros, Kraft, list goes on. General admission
Midnight
tickets.
Magic, Computer Magic.
Computer Magic, Ducky, Punches, Snacky Tune, DJs. That's right. We're going to be DJing live. So if you ever want to see us live DJing, this is your chance. Tickets are on sale, $60 a piece. And they're on sale at citywinery.com. It's going to be awesome. It's on its way to a sellout.
Punches is DJing this Thursday at Santos. And if you look online, I think it's just RSVP something at something.
That's really good. We'll get some really information. Good, yeah. It's for our friends with Death and Taxes. But we are happy today to be joined with one of our favorite people, Garrett Oliver.
And Patrick North.
Patrick North.
From Ace Fale Records.
Almost.
Almost. What is it?
Ace Fale.
Man, come on.
Close enough.
Not even close enough. I've been practicing.
That's the sad part.
That's the worst part. So as always, we'll have more music from Patrick talking about the label later on the show. What was the opening track that we just played?
That was Honeymine by Cora Revan.
Nice. I liked it. I could see myself listening to it in the park.
It's a little summery.
It's summery.
It's a good
summer jams, right?
Exactly. What's today? Tomorrow's the first day of summer.
Yay.
Yes.
it's supposed to rain for the next 2 days. So, Garrett Oliver, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
For those who don't know who Garrett is, which I would find it hard to believe, Garrett is the brewmaster of the Brooklyn Brewery, author of The Brewmaster's Table, and editor-in-chief of the Oxford Companion to Beer, essentially the go-to guy for beer in America, if not the world.
I am the liquid.
You are the liquid,
I'm the liquid.
Yes, he bleeds beer. I've seen it. It's nice.
I didn't see you there yesterday.
Yeah. So, Garrett, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Good to be here.
And I see that you have a bottle of beer, and I think the first important thing is to talk about that beer and get it open.
Excellent. Well, this is a beer that represents some stuff that we've been working on for a while with some good friends of ours over at the Red Hook Winery. And it's kind of an experiment where we've actually been aging beers in barrels on wine lees. So the lees are the sediment that fall out of the wine at the end of fermentation. It includes yeast, but also a lot of other compounds from the wine. And the interesting thing is that because these are all naturally made wines and they don't include any lab yeasts, you are basically using the winery to collect all the microflora from the atmosphere, which is out on Long Island, and then concentrating it into this barrel. And the result is something which is kind of on the border between beer and wine, having qualities of each, and having, as far as I'm concerned, the funk.
The funk?
It has the funk.
What's it called?
We call it Crochet Rouge, which means Red Hook.
Okay.
There it is. Oh, it sounds different.
It's re-fermented in the bottle like champagne. In fact, we use champagne yeast for the re-fermentation. This is actually is a cuvée, meaning that we put it together out of a few different barrels. One of the barrels was aged on...
It's like a reddish color.
Exactly. One of them was aged on red wine
lees. Tilt the glass. What are you doing?
So you have a kind of a pinkish salmon-like color to it.
It's good. All right. So as Never Forget Pours, let's go back. So this is the now. This is 2011. This is the crazy experiment. Hey, cheers.
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 Cheers. Cheers.
Okay. Oh, it's delicious.
Tough life in radio. Life.
So let's go back. So you started brewing in 1989, and now, and we'll come back to this. You've done these amazing experiments in beer, including Manhattan and all these other things. But you got your start at a pretty traditional type of brewing setup at the Manhattan Brewing Company, right?
Yeah. I mean, I fell in love with beer, actually, living in England.
As one does.
I was DJing, and I was stage managing bands.
What bands?
And, oh, I put on everybody from Billy Bragg, Cocteau Twins, Icicle Works. I took the Ramones bowling.
Wow. how was Joey Ramone as a bowler?
Yeah, I'll tell you the story sometime. It didn't last very long, I'll put it that way.
Okay. And what was your DJ name back in the day?
I didn't have a DJ name. I just went and did it.
So you're loving brews in London, and you come back to New York.
I come back to New York, and I discovered that we did not, in fact, have any beer. And the stuff that I had been drinking in college was, in fact, not beer.
What? It was
a beer facsimile.
Budweiser's not beer?
I'm saying that the mass market beer that most people are familiar with across the board, as far as I'm concerned, is not actually beer any more than Wonder Bread is actually bread.
Okay. All right. So So technically you can call it beer, but it's not really beer.
Yeah. I mean, it really depends on your point of view. If you consider Kraft slices to be cheese, then...
Yeah. Hey, don't taste the Rockies. So you get into brewing. So you get into brewing because, as most people who have that DIY spirit, they don't like what's going on out there at a mass level, and they want to make a difference.
I started making beer not because I wanted to make beer. I started making beer in order to have some beer. So right. And then fell in love with the process of actually making it. So it's kind of the way craft brewing got started across the board. People fell in love with something, and then they decided to do it because it kept calling to them.
So you started there as an apprentice in 89, and by 93, you were actually the brewmaster.
I was the head brewer there after the original brewmaster, Mark Whitty, left for California. He had been the head brewer for Samuel Smith's in England. So I kind of learned the professional side of brewing from him.
And at this point, you're still just doing traditional beers, or are you starting to experiment at all?
It was mostly traditional beers, but I was pushing it. Right. You know, a lot of bringing back a lot of old styles, you know, like the sort of original styles of IPA, which you're going to find all over the place these days, but was very rare or impossible to find in those days. So, you know, there were some things that were certainly experimental, but not nearly so experimental as stuff that we do now.
I mean, if you really look at beers from the early 90s, and this was, you know, way before I was even drinking beer, even at an illegal age. I mean, the growth of beer, especially in the food realm, and its respect has grown at an exponential level. Like, it's insane now, the level. I mean, they even call something like the words craft and beer to be in the same sentence is mind-blowing. And I'm sure you saw and were part of that growth, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, this coming Sunday, I'm doing a beer dinner at 11 Madison Park.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
All those guys are great pals of mine, and it's really totally them. It's not, I mean, we're going to be pouring stuff that a lot of people never tasted before. And the fact that you have a restaurant on that caliber, you know, coming to us and saying, we want to do some stuff with you, and we're really into beer, and we want to, you know, make this thing happen and make it interesting and make it part of who we are, that is a big turnaround from what you saw 20 years ago.
Well, we did that pop-up dinner with you at the Rising Tide, and, where, you know, it was all beer pairing.
And boom, you know, I mean, look at how fast that thing filled up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was pretty much instantaneous.
For our music listeners, explain 11 Madison Park, Darren.
11 Madison Park is Danny Myers, yes?
It is Danny Myers.
It's Danny Myers, and it is a 4-star restaurant, and it is a James Beard winner, and it's probably... For those who don't know, Danny Myers is a musical level. He is the personification of perfect service. I mean, it really is just, you cannot get served better in New York, really, than in Danny Myers' restaurant. And at a certain level, it's a cornerstone in fine dining cuisine. And to see beer paired with this is insane because so traditionally it's been wine. And can you talk a little, Garrett, about how beer has started to encroach on wine's only spot at the table?
No, I'll say all this. I have to preface it by saying that I'm a total, I'm a beer geek, I'm a wine geek, I'm a cocktail geek.
Right.
So, I mean, I say this with love. However, beer has a much, much, much wider range of flavor than wine does.
Absolutely.
By far. I mean, it's not even really arguable. So, you know, what that means is that, you know, because you have caramelized flavors, you have roasted flavors, I can smoke the malt. I've smoked malt next to bacon, you know, mm-hmm. you know, down at smokehouses in Tennessee and stuff like that, and made beer out of it. We can make beer taste like anything, and that means that we have the ability to pair anything. And people have a wish often to make wine go where it doesn't even want to go. And sometimes that's surprising places, like cheese. Yeah. I've done beer versus wine with cheese, you know, in front of audiences, Iron Chef style, against top sommeliers, and they always lose.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're either surprised or not surprised, but they always lose.
It's funny. I was talking to Chef Richard Blaze about wine pairings, and he goes, why would I want to drink grape juice with all of my courses?
Yeah.
And it's, and I never thought about it that way. And I goes, you know, it really is a limited flavor profile. And when you think about the range of beers, even if you're not an expert beer drinker, if you think just about like a pale ale versus like a wheat beer and just the range in those flavors and the bitterness, that alone is just showing like the difference in flavors and tastes that you can have.
And then you have something which has roasted malt and tastes like coffee and chocolate.
Absolutely. I mean, your Manhattan beer. Can you talk a little? Well, you know, how about this? Let's play a little music. And then we'll get back. Let's talk about the Brooklyn Brewery, some of the events that you have coming up. And we'll talk about the Tonic name story and how that beer is alive but not actually named as Tonic, which is a great story. I'm Terry Diabolik. Never Forget's got an iPod in
this
his hand.
Is another track from Acephal Records.
Acephal.
Hey! There we're speaking to Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. We are your host, Finger on the Pulse. Patrick, who was that?
That was Pure X, formerly Pure Ecstasy. The track called Dry Ice, which is coming off their album out next month.
Why did they change the name?
Because a wedding band in San Francisco threatened to sue them.
Oh, you know what? I just ran into Sam.
So oh, yeah.
Group Tightener.
Who was just in.
He was just down hanging out with them.
Yeah.
Who he and his partner in crime were on a previous episode of Snacky Tune for the independent label series that
we're
doing.
That's the other label that we had on there.
Group Tightener. Yeah, and you can check it out on our podcast. Anyway, we are in studio eating delicious Roberta's pizza. Every week I'm impressed by how awesome it is. Like every week. Like it's like every week I'm surprised about how amazing it is. We're hanging out with Garrett Oliver, who's the brewmaster over at Brooklyn Brewery. And right before the break, we were talking about his experimental flavors in beer. And we were talking about the Manhattan. But more recently, you had a launch for a beer that was supposed to be called the Tonic. And if you could tell us what happened there and why it's not called the Tonic.
Well, at first, you know, we made the Manhattan beer. We made it was called the Manhattan Project. We made it a few years ago with our friend Dave Wondrich. You know, who's one of the people who got me really seriously into cocktails. So I kind of run with the cocktail mafia when I'm not running with the beer mafia. Mm-hmm. And
is it like a jet versus sharks thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, it doesn't have to be. You know, I can move between these worlds. You know, right. Because they are also the liquid,
right?
And
right.
I'm the liquid, so right. It's all good. And so we made a beer that was designed to taste exactly like a Manhattan. And we didn't want to go back to the cocktail well again, but there are so many interesting flavor ideas coming out of it that, you know, we decided to do it. I sat down with the brewers. I was mixing cocktails, and we did old fashions and stuff. I said, you know, my favorite cocktail right now is called the Penicillin. Mm-hmm. And the Penicillin is ginger, scotch, honey, and lemon, basically. Those are the elements. So we invented a beer which would take on all of those characteristics. We used 20% peat smoked malt that is used in Scotch whiskey to give us the smoky character. We got about 1,200 pounds of minced ginger. We got 1,200 pounds of minced ginger. We got Sicilian lemon juice, organic. Interesting thing you find when you're looking for weird ingredients. You cannot find lemon juice that is not full of, like, sodium, all kinds of
Did you just buy lemons and juice them yourself?
No, there was no way to juice enough lemons to make that happen, so we got an organic lemon juice. Unfortunately, it had to come from far away, but it's awesome.
Right.
So all these elements in the beer, and the beer was supposed to be called the Tonic, because we knew we couldn't call the beer the Penicillin. So the day we're having the release party for the beer,
right?
We get a thing back from our friends in the government, you know, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, now known as the TTB.
Yep.
And they tell us the name, the Tonic, actually promises a medical benefit, which you may not promise on behalf of your beer. And we're like, no.
It makes you feel good, though, right?
Yeah, but I mean, when did your doctor ever go to you and say, okay, go home and take this tonic?
Yeah.
Tonic is from like 1870 or something, maybe.
Here's some snake oil.
Exactly.
And some Coca-Cola.
But you don't find much of a sense of humor or those sorts of things in those folks. So in the last moment, we had to pick another name, so we decided upon the concoction.
Which is just as fine and delicious.
It is the same beer, just going under an alias.
So these types of experiments, I know that, you know, when I was traveling around earlier this year in Europe, I was even in like Aarhus and like other parts of Copenhagen, like Brooklyn Brewery, your beers are out there, but it's mostly the lager. How do I get access to these more unique and, you know, experimental beers?
Well, we just built a new brewery. Right there in the same spot where we were. We expanded into another building, set of buildings. We now wrap all the way around Brooklyn Bowl.
Wow.
And so we just put in a whole new brewing system and everything else. And part of what that's doing is giving us the ability to get more of those specialty beers out there. We always made a group of beers called Brewmasters Reserve,
mm-hmm.
and these are draft beers. They're draft-only specials that come and go like the specials on a restaurant menu. And this is a great opportunity for us to kind of explore all kinds of wild things. And then the stuff that you have in front of you now, this is kind of what we call ghost bottles. These are things where there may be, this was aged in barrels for months. there are really 50 cases. So that's too little to actually sell.
Mm-hmm.
So we do events, and these are the beers where we're like, you know what? If you want to taste these beers, that's great, but you have to come meet us and have a conversation.
So how do people get invited to these events?
We basically put it out there through people, the bars that we and restaurants that we do stuff with. This beer will actually be served at Per Se on Sunday with some beautiful oysters. And it'll be the first time that anybody tastes it.
Second time.
You know, notice how the bottom of the bottle where the yeast is also has some of the
there's more
see the color? Mm. You have a lot more of the sediment that dropped out from the skins.
It's literally like a salmon pink.
Yeah.
Type of color. So let's talk about another one of your other beards, which actually ties into one of the great things of New York is the elevated wheat, the Highline elevated wheat beer. And how you guys are involved with the Highline, the new section that opened up, extending to 30th Street, right?
Yep. And that was really exciting. I mean, they came to us and said that they wanted to work with us on creating a beer. And since the whole point of Highline really is focusing on stuff that's local, I wanted to fit as much sort of New York State ingredients as we could into, mm-hmm. into the beer. But that actually becomes difficult because most of the grain in the United States grows in the Midwest. It doesn't grow near us. And it's been over 100 years since any brewery, even in the great heyday of breweries in Brooklyn, when we made 10% of all the beer in the United States in Brooklyn, in case people didn't notice or know that. But the malt was still coming from the Midwest. So I wanted something that was from here. And what I thought, what I knew we could get was New York State grown wheat. And I reached out to a few people and eventually reached the people, Kevin Richardson, up at North Country Farms. And he actually is stone grinding New York State wheat specifically for our beer. So it's a really cool project. We're also using the honey from our friends up at Tremblay Farms, mm-hmm. who we've been using lots of honey from for years. Alan Tremblay and his family farm, and these are really coming through really nicely in the beer. And you know, the only problem with the beer is right now that it's been going so fast that they've actually got a little bit out ahead of us. So we're having to scramble to brew a lot more. But it's
that's a good
problem to have. I'll take it.
Well, Garrett, thank you so much for being on the show. I know that you guys have an event coming up on June 28th. Williamsburg Greenpoint at the Brooklyn Brewery, which is at 79th North 11th Street. Tickets are available online.
I am sure they're available online, or you go to brooklynbrewery.com, and we'll sort you out.
Yeah, and Garrett, what's your Twitter?
At Garrett Oliver.
Fantastic. All right, Garrett, well, thank you so much. Thank you for the beer. We are going to down all of it and keep munching on delicious pizza. Up next, we have a couple of songs from Patrick from...
No, your turn.
I don't... Asafe Records?
Asafal?
Asa, you got it.
Yes! I'm going home, going to bed after this. This is it.
Yeah, you earned it.
I did earn it. It's a big day.
Awesome. And anyway, we got some update. That event for Punches is this Thursday at Death and Taxes. It's going to be Ray-Ban, Never Hide. And for RSVP, it's RSVP at deathandtaxesmag.com.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's us and Javelin, Beach Fossils, Free Tiger Beer, 7:30 to 9.
Free 42 Below Vodka.
Free 42 Below Vodka. It's going to be a good time. I'm Terry Diabolic from Finger on the Pulse.
And I'm DJ Never Forget. And Patrick is going to play a couple tunes for us, and we're going to talk about the duality of labels.
Thank you so much, Garrett.
Good night. And
Talk to me.
pizza is so good.
That's a nice little outro just to like bring a... We should maybe incorporate like some bells or chimes into like bringing us back in.
Really?
No. Maybe that one time. You are listening to Snacky Tunes. We are host Finger on the Pulse. We are joined by Patrick North of Acephal Records.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I'm like kind of half joking. Like a week from now, I'll be like, fuck. I'll have to go back and listen to the episode. And I was like, I know I said it right once.
It's your failure to learn French at a young age.
I know.
Do you speak fluent French?
No.
So our
collective
failure.
Once upon a time,
failure.
I was nowhere near fluent, but fluent enough that I could get by.
So
good enough.
That's the Canadian education system for you.
Patrick, I've known you, I feel like it's been for a few years now, mostly through the internet. Mostly through the internet until one
day. Did you guys meet on OKCupid?
No. We met on the internet.
I think we all met before the internet.
You had long hair.
I had long hair. We were in Montreal at the, what was it?
The iPod battle.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, no, it definitely had to be because of the internet. Were you one of the people competing?
No, I was competing, yeah.
Oh, man. We got SLU records.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. To this day, I feel that we... unfairly lost the first round. Well, we lost to the hometown favorites.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a big problem.
But like a couple points. Anyway,
that was actually one
remember?
Of my favorite.
You remember?
They don't call me Never Forget for a reason.
I'm eating more pizza.
So we met then, and then it was a number of years, and we stayed in touch, and then you got a job with Modular USA when they relaunched.
Absolutely.
Along with our good friend, Shelly Wright.
Hello.
A.K.A. DJ Barbara Vegas. But alongside that, you've been running very consistently a well-curated independent record label.
Yeah, it's a little different than running a label like Modular, mainly because it's really until now been a boutique label. I mean, we've only really done vinyl releases, the few digital counterparts until now, whereas now we're sort of transitioning into a real record label sort of lane and releasing an album next month.
And what album is that?
Pure X, who you heard earlier and I think you'll probably hear again. We're putting out their debut called Pleasure.
When you say we, is it like the royal we or there's actually more than one of us?
There's definitely more than one of us. My partner, who also was at that iPod battle, is Rory Them Finest, who's a DJ and graphic designer and all around amazing dude in Toronto.
Man.
So he's my partner and he handles the visual side of the label and I sort of take care of the rest.
Hey, can we take a second? iPod battles.
Wait, no. Even further. 1 year anniversary, 700 person sold out venue iPod battle.
Look, there are some things, and I don't really know how to explain it, but that are only popular in Montreal, and that is one of them. Like the insanity. Do you remember when they did it at Cielo here in New York?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting off topic. You have a partner, Rory, who's also an awesome dude.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, so take us back to the beginning, because your first release is with Salem.
Yeah.
So did you want to do a label and you met them, or you met them and you're like, this deserves to be...
Well, it actually came about when the previous label that I was an A&R for, Summer Lovers Unlimited, was sort of disintegrating. And I found Salem on MySpace the first time I listened to their tracks. I was about 30 seconds in and I just freaked out. And immediately wanted to work with them. Just messaged them and got the label started right there and then.
I mean, it's
and they wrote you back and like, cool, we're down.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much, actually. I mean, it took a little bit of convincing and some conversations on the phone. But yeah, we hit it off. And I've worked with them in a management capacity for the past few years as well. They're an interesting, awesome bunch of people.
We don't need to delve into that. Just go, listeners, go do your research. If you're unaware and listening to this portion of the show, you should probably step back.
Hit pause. Mm.
Hit pause. Do some research. But so that was number one, and now you're up to release...
We're up to 17 now.
17. So it's like, and now that, like, MySpace, which is, you know, very interesting way to, they found music, and now how are you finding your releases, or people coming to you, are you still searching out on, like SoundCloud, or Facebook, or...
You know what, actually, it's true, MySpace was really useful, because it allows you to see, like, the whole Top Friends thing, made it very easy for you to make connections between bands. Now, definitely, SoundCloud's awesome, but people send me stuff. is more the way that I'm finding stuff right now.
And how do people? How can people send you stuff?
Just acephalerecords@gmail.com.
You want to spell that?
acephalerecords@gmail. Yeah.
And awesome. What are you going to say?
I just said awesome.
Oh, okay. Which made me lose my my question I was going
to
ask.
So now that you're up to number 17 and you're starting to switch from you know, a boutique to a more traditional label, what are the growing pains that you're dealing with?
Well, cash flow is always a big one, I think, for everybody.
Also, you can send money to that or through Bitcoin, which I know you're a huge
fan. Oh, my lord. Yeah,
Bitcoin. We don't have to get into that.
We
don't have enough days.
Every time I try and read about Bitcoin, I understand it, but at the same time, it blows my mind.
It's pretty nuts.
Do you own Bitcoins?
I bought Bitcoins about 3 or 4 months ago now and saw them go from about $1.40 to $30 and then back down to $1 yesterday. It all crashed.
Is that it?
It's not it. No, somebody hacked an exchange. And it was
See, that's what I'm talking about. Is that
that's
like,
what you're talking about? I haven't heard you talk about it once.
No, but no, well, you haven't been around. But that's why I don't understand about Bitcoin. Is that like what is keeping these?
Somebody didn't hack Bitcoin. Somebody hacked an exchange of Bitcoin.
But that's what I'm talking. Like with nothing that has anything that's got a physical type of weighted system, like gold, like. Can't someone hack it if it's all
currency?
Digital?
Yeah, the American can currency.
I'm sorry.
Okay, cash flow is a problem. What are other problems?
Send bitcoins too.
Well, I mean, other problems are mainly just workload. I mean, you know, doing modular is obviously a huge undertaking over here.
And by the way, kudos to the years that modular has had.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Since you and Shelley were kind of relaunched in the US, it's been Jen Amato took it as far as it could.
We love Jen, by the way.
Yeah. And now with like this, you know, next incarnation, it's been great.
We've had you know, the fortune to work with some really amazing bands. Tame Impala, we love to death. Obviously Cut Copy, we love to death. And CEO, Bag Raiders, all these great musicians.
That Bag Raiders show at Santos was...
Bag Raiders are incredible. Are they
coming back this summer?
They are, actually.
But you're going to be out of town.
They are coming back. They're on a big tour, and I can't remember if it's been announced yet. But
we'll find out.
So I'm not gonna say anything right now, just in case.
What about the Avalanches?
This comes up every single time I talk to anybody about modular.
But come on, we're like all everyone is waiting.
I was really really hopeful, and I was saying a lot last year about it was going to happen this year, it was going to happen this year, it's going to happen this year. But now I'm kind of at a point where I'm starting to be a little more cautious.
Okay.
So that said, it seems as though it's probably going to happen in about March of next year. So, I'd say.
And what is the happening?
The happening, the next album.
So
album number two after 11 years.
Let's pull back from modular, but balancing modular and your own label,
right.
Is it a gray line? Is it like, what takes priority or how does
modular takes priority.
I mean, but like, let's say someone comes to you with a release. Do you go through the proper chance? Like, hey, modular, they came to me. Do you like this? And then you wait and they say no. It's like, I actually like.
Well, but based on the songs you played, it's like two different sounds, right?
Yeah, it's definitely two different sounds. I mean, we do a little more of the lo-fi stuff. You know, there is some crossover, though. I mean, you know, we've worked with similar artists, especially through Sweden, and Sincerely Yours. But, yeah, I mean, if I have something that catches my attention for my label, I give it to, you know, the modular boss first. And if he's feeling it, then we pursue it. And if he's not, then we don't. And I end up doing it myself.
So it's transparent. So he knows about the label.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Supportive?
Yeah, he's definitely very supportive.
Do you ever see you being sort of like the minor leagues for some band that might get, you know, upstream to modular?
I mean, that's really a complicated question, just because, you know, I mean, that's business relationship stuff. But, yeah, I mean, there's certainly bands that I think would be able to make that jump. It's just maybe not the right time for them. In terms of Pav's ears, Pav is the founder and owner of Modular.
I heard he's declared a demigod in Australia.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. I mean, he's quite the guy down there. That's for sure.
It's really insane when you look at music culture in Australia and the UK, and about how giant certain figures are, like that have a record label that wouldn't that relationship sort of wouldn't transfer over to America.
Absolutely.
I mean, I guess unless you're looking like some like a, you know, like a Puff Daddy or something like that.
But it's it's the same Canada to the US. I mean, you're always going to have some stuff that resonates, you know, more closely with its populace in one place than it is going to with another place.
But there is sort of more of a unity in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's more of a unity than there is, you know, in Canada or the UK. It really does seem to be a similar thing right across the board.
Yeah.
But tastes are going to be different.
Terry, are you drawing these conclusions from your extensive time in Australia?
it's from my love for The Voice.
Patrick, why don't we get you to play a few more songs? By the way, I think this is it. It looks like they're coming July 29th with Ellie Goulding at Terminal 5.
That's right, they're touring with Ellie Goulding.
So I will be there. I will actually be in town. Not to put you on the spot, but list. Anyway,
I'm pretty sure you're sorted.
So we're gonna get Patrick to play a few more tunes, and then we're gonna come back and talk about some really pointed issues that we will figure out in the musical interlude. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. We are your host, Finger on the Pulse. Here we go with Asif Records. Every day is another battle.
Just like that.
That's nice. Is that the DJ Never Forget edit of that song?
Yeah, that's technically an edit. What can I say?
Not much.
Anyway, who was that, Patrick?
That was Coral Revan again, and that was the LOL Boys remix.
Jerome
and Marcus.
I saw Jerome when I was out in LA a while ago, just like talking shit to Greg Bowler, like just.
Marcus was just here.
Okay,
and Marcus is a character and a half.
They're both characters.
Oh yeah. They're both characters, but Jerome was DJing at the Standard and was just cracking me up with some of the stories he had to tell me. He's a great guy.
And what were the other two tracks?
Oh man, what were the other two tracks now? I think one of them was the Keep Shelly in Athens remix of
Porcelain Raft.
And the one before that was a new guy that I've started to work with called Para Siempre, and that track was called But I Still.
So one of the things that we wanted to cover that we always like to when we get the indie label guys here are how do you, like, if I was like, hey, I'm 22 and I want to start a label, and besides you going,
is that your impression of a 22-year-old?
Hey guys. And being like, besides you being like, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, that's the first question. Don't do it.
Don't do it. But after they go like, no, I like really go, what are like, a few tips that you would say that like kind of held you up specifically?
Well, not necessarily that held me up, but I think the first thing is that if you're going to release a record, you can't have any question of doubt in your mind if that record is something that you're absolutely in love with and passionate about. If you're kind of like, I kind of want to release this band, but this band is sort of like them, so I sort of like them, it's not going to happen. You've got to really, really, truly believe in what you're doing. Just,
it's
like in anything.
It's 3 o'clock.
Hello?
Hello. Thank you.
I think that was the computer, actually. you've got to absolutely believe in what you're putting out. But staying organized is definitely the number one thing. It's very easy, and you see this with a lot of labels that put out their first record, and this happened to me to a certain extent, is that they will have delays on your vinyl pressing. That can take a long time, and you don't want to have a pre-order situation where customers are waiting, 3, 4, 5 months or never get their record, which I've seen recently with more than a few startups. So that's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, because that money's spent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And what about advice for finding new artists, just on a personal level, of how you like say that you're starting work with somebody?
Right.
What is working with somebody entail before you release their album?
Working with somebody, for me, it's certainly there's like a cure. Helping him curate his releases, figuring out how to tell a story with each release, whether it's an EP or an album. And figuring out what works and what doesn't, whether it's finding the right mastering person or mixer for them. There's another guy I'm working with right now who has a set of songs that essentially sound like field recordings, which is appropriate because he's a very, very odd folk artist from Italy. And, he has some songs that are studio recorded, and when you put those up against these other songs in the album mix, it just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So we've had to find the right person to take those studio mixes and to basically rip them apart because they're all recorded live and make them sound like they were recorded in the field or in a basement or something like that.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like an interesting way to take something that's like studio and to break it down into like the bare essentials.
Yeah, I mean, with this one, and you
what's
will
the name of the artist?
This is Ecstasy. He's just I'll play one of his tracks. He has the most incredible voice, and I'll say that I'll play one of his tracks at the end of the show. Just keep in mind that there's absolutely no vocal effects on his voice because he's got the most insane voice I've ever heard.
I guess my final question for the day is that, is the indie label community a friendly one, or do you find yourself having sort of rivalries with people who are going after the same artists?
I've never had a rivalry. Mm-hmm. I've never been in a position where somebody's been pursuing my artist, and if they have, well, that's not true. I have been in that position, but it's never been something that's been acrimonious or negative. Fortunately, I've never lost an artist that I haven't wanted to move along from or you know, have the capacity to work with. But no, I don't think it's that necessarily that competitive. You obviously do hear stories from time to time about that, but I'd say those are the exceptions.
Great. All right, so do you want to load up that last track?
Yeah.
Thanks. Wait, but before you go, what are the nuts and bolts of everything?
Twitter,
Facebook.
Oh,
Facebook.
Twitter, Facebook. Acephalerecords.com, ACEPHALE.com. And that's the same as the Twitter. It's Acephal Records. Facebook, I'm going to tell you, we really don't utilize that as much as we should. And
Same.
Yeah.
Guilty,
exactly.
And how's the Googleability of your record label name?
That's very, very, very easy.
Yeah.
You can do that anytime, easily.
Well, Patrick, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
So that's it. We are off for 2 weeks. We are heading out to the desert to meet up with one of our best bros, Travis. We'll be back July 11th. I'm not sure who it is yet. We have some things up in the air for guests and dates and things like that.
Hopefully trying to get Dean from Drew Panther on to finish out our 6 week.
And then hopefully it's Mark from Del Posto. July 13th is the final smaller barbecue, the barbecue blowout series. And the barbecue blowout festival is August 6th.
Guild tickets should be going on sale.
They're on sale.
For the smaller one.
Oh, the smaller one. They should be going on sale on the, third or 2 weeks out. I don't know.
Anyway, so we'll be back in a
couple
weeks. Go
to FOTPNYC.com for all info.
That means I have to go update it.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So who's this last track?
He just gave Greg some work. We're about to listen to SSC. This will be coming out, I think, early next year.
Awesome. Okay, great. All right, so thank you so much. Thank you to Jack Inslee, to Patrick Martin, Heritage, Roberta's, and everybody else who makes this show the best thing in our lives.